Hello, this is John Richardson speaking with you from Toronto, Canada. And this is actually a very important day as in date. So I think that I'll let Karen and Laura fill in the date. Laura, what's the date?
Well, it depends on where you are. If you are, depending on your time zone, say if you are Europe or Australia, it is November 28th. If you are in the North America, it is November 27th.
Oh my God. There was a reason why I asked you. Okay. So I think we're both on November 27th and November 28th. And that's actually quite significant because the date apparently depends on perspective. And today we are actually going to talk a little bit about the question of perspective. And the question is, are Americans abroad part of the American community? And if we look at a lot of what's going on, I think that both Karen and Laura would agree that there is sometimes a bit of a difference in perspective. Laura, your thoughts on that?
Well, what I think we need to keep in mind is this. One of the arguments, in fact, a major argument for why it's considered right for the U.S. to tax overseas Americans is that, well, they're Americans, they're part of U.S. society. And you will see, you know, that terminology used in the academic literature, in popular discussions. And so you got to ask yourself, okay, are they members of U.S. society? Do Americans in the United States perceive overseas Americans to be members of U.S. society in such that not only should they fully contribute in terms of their taxes to U.S. society, but they should also fully benefit, as all Americans do, from the benefits of being a member of the U.S. society. And I think if you really look at that question and what that means, and you know, what are the signs that overseas Americans are or are not members of U.S. society, I think you can look at some very concrete and objective examples that demonstrate that pretty much from the perspective of the United States, of the U.S. government in particular, maybe even the U.S. population as a whole, overseas Americans are not members of the U.S. society, of U.S. society. So two, I think, good examples among many are the Advanced Child Tax Credit, which was adopted in the 2021 American Rescue Plan, and also the Earned Income Tax Credit, which has been around for decades. In both cases, in order to qualify for them, well, for the Advanced Child Tax Credit, at least one of the child's parents has to live in the United States for at least half a year. And in addition to that, the credit only applies with respect to children who have a valid Social Security number. And a lot of U.S. citizens living overseas don't meet the requirements to pass U.S. citizenship to their children born outside the United States, so they're ineligible for that anyway. Or if their children were born, you know, during COVID, they're probably really struggling to register the birth abroad of their children and get them Social Security numbers. And then for the Earned Income Tax Credit, to be eligible for that, well, there's three important obstacles for overseas Americans. You have to live in the United States for more than half the year. You can't claim the foreign earned income exclusion, and you can't use the filing status, married filing separately. So if one of those doesn't knock you out of contention for the Earned Income Tax Credit, another one of those requirements will. I can talk about some more things, but I'll stop there, John, and let you jump in.
Okay, so it sounds like what you're saying is that, leaving aside perspective, that Americans abroad are just not getting a lot of benefits that resident Americans are. You would agree with at least that point, right?
Of course. Like I said, okay. I can even give you more examples.
Okay, well, let's let Karen chime in here for one second. Karen, on the question of perspective, are they or are they not? Are Americans abroad part of the American community?
So I think it's absolutely ridiculous for the U.S. government to provide welfare type benefits to people who live in other countries and are qualified for welfare type benefits in those countries. But on the same token, if the American government's not going to provide those benefits, then the American government should not be taxing them on their worldwide income.
Okay. Well, what about the argument that, you know, that all Americans should be contributing to the cost of running the country, and part of the cost of running the country is, you know, providing, to use your word, welfare benefits to resident Americans?
Now, if welfare benefits are then the benefits you get from being part of the taxpaying community, then they should be available to everybody that has to pay tax.
Laura,
that makes membership in U.S. society really a one-way street, doesn't it? Sure, you are a member when it comes to you providing funding and you making a contribution. But when it comes to the other way of you benefiting from the contributions that others make, absolutely not. And if it comes, you know, when it's that direction, then no, you are no longer a member of U.S. society.
Isn't a better way to put it? I think one could put it that way, but isn't a better way to put it simply that the United States government wants to get people who are not members of U.S. society to pay for the benefits of resident Americans?
I'd go with that.
let's just hang on here for one second, okay? Now, I'm quite serious about this, okay? Let's look at, for example, the net investment income tax. Okay, you know, this Obamacare surtax. Karen, Americans abroad subject to the net investment income tax?
Just like any other U.S. tax.
Are they benefiting from health care in the United States?
Not at all. They're not in the United States.
Plus,
the tax was written, so you can't even use a foreign tax credit against it.
Exactly.
So
Americans... Insult to injury.
Yep, Americans abroad that are hit by that tax are basically being double taxed.
No question about that at all. Interestingly, the distributions, I think I'm right on this, Karen, distributions from 401ks in the United States, I don't believe are part of the income base that's subject to the net investment income tax. But
no, probably not.
But guess what is? Distributions from a Canadian RRSP.
Yeah, and or possibly, well, depending on how you've handled your Australian super, it could be, especially if you've got an SMSF, it could very well be.
So, I mean, the point here is that if we look at the net investment income tax, there are specific legislative carve-outs for resident Americans, no carve-outs for Americans abroad, plus there's no way to use foreign tax credits paid on that same income to offset that net investment income tax thing. So it's as though what the United States has done is simply put up, you know, funnels all around America, or vacuums that are designed to suck up 3.8% of investment income outside the country, right?
It's one way of looking at it, certainly.
Well, it's an extraordinary thing. And that's why, you know, to get back to Laura's point here, are Americans abroad members really, or are they completely irrelevant and just seen as a way to add to the U.S. tax base?
Well, I think, you know, I said that there's other examples. I think there's one that's very timely that we've talked about before, which is, you know, the United States made a big deal of making COVID-19 vaccines available free of charge to U.S. residents. Regardless
all
of citizenship.
Americans was what the president said. All Americans.
It did say all Americans. And they used federal funds. So they, you know, we all are called upon to pay U.S. taxes. They take the U.S. taxes, at least this is how it's portrayed, and they provide vaccines to everybody who lives in the United States. Doesn't matter if you're a citizen or not. Free of charge. When the United States is asked, can you please provide these vaccinations to citizens living overseas? The response is, no, we do not provide direct medical care to private U.S. citizens abroad. Now, they did. They were a little slow in doing it, but the United States did set up ways to vaccinate military personnel and consular personnel overseas. So they had a way of doing it. They also, what's very interesting is a particular country where there was a real problem for any foreigner to get vaccinated was Thailand, because Thailand had limited vaccines and was prioritizing citizens. And France actually set up a way for French citizens living in Thailand to get vaccinated. They contracted with with at least one hospital in Thailand where French citizens could come and get vaccinated. Now, France did that, even though France does not impose an income tax on its citizens who live outside of France. But the United States apparently has no way, or at least refused, to provide medical care to private U.S. citizens abroad, even though, again, they're using federal funds to provide the vaccinations in the United States. I think, you know, you can look at another example as something that, again, the three of us have spent a lot of time on. The IRS spends almost no money administering the U.S. tax system outside of the United States. There are so many services that the IRS provides to people living in the United States, again, regardless of citizenship, that are absolutely not provided to overseas Americans. And when the IRS has been asked to provide those things, they've said, no, we will not. So, you know, what are the types of things we're talking about? In-person assistance. The IRS has taxpayer assistance centers, volunteer income tax assistance centers, tax counseling for the elderly. There's thousands of those around the United States. There's not a single place outside the United States where overseas taxpayers can go to get help with their federal taxes. In the US, people can call the IRS on a toll-free basis. Outside the United States, absolutely not possible. In the US, people can get relatively on-time postal communications. Outside the US, very rare does the mail arrive on time. There's access to online accounts, which the IRS expressly bars to people who live outside the United States. I could go on and on.
Well, I heard this week that there was some major, major breakthrough that all of a sudden America might be able to access their accounts from outside. Could this be true?
Well, apparently, at least a few people have managed to do it. But as a general rule, it's still not true. If you try from overseas, to open an online account or to access your online account with the IRS, you might actually do it, but there's no guarantee you'll be able to. So that's, if people are able to do it, it's an accident of how they're changing their systems, but certainly not something the IRS has expressly done to make the online accounts accessible to overseas citizens.
Well, I mean, certainly, you know, you made the point upside down, sideways and diagonally that Americans abroad are just basically disregarded by the IRS, right?
Yes, that's the nice way of putting it.
Is that a good thing or a bad thing to be disregarded by the, you know, there's a lot of people in the world who would think that it'd be wonderful to be disregarded by the IRS.
Well, okay, how do you disregard in the sense that you're not provided services, but if you are in the US tax system, the IRS is going to, you know, and they think you're not doing something correctly, they're going to let you know. And obviously all of the people that have been getting those, you know, penalty notices for $10,000, $20,000. I think there was recently someone who got a $110,000 penalty notice for not filing the trust informational
form. 3520.
Yeah, there you go.
Well, so let's Karen in for this for 1 second. You know, it occurs to me that maybe these 3520 penalties are just the equivalent of like a net investment income tax applied to Americans abroad. What do you think?
I don't think there was that much thought behind them. I think it was an automated system that went haywire, and they didn't really even understand what they were requesting that taxpayers do in terms of what the instructions said to do. And they programmed their system to look at something that wasn't in the instructions.
Well, you know, you may be right, but I'll tell you what's not an accident is this, that there's no possible way that the types of things these penalties are being issued for were contemplated by the by these foreign trust rules in the Internal Revenue Code. Not a chance. These things
are looking for U.S. based people who were using foreign trusts to hide income.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right.
Not foreign people who were just going about their lives totally compliant where they live, and where they live, some structure that everybody uses for financial planning or retirement planning, somebody thinks might be a trust under U.S. law.
They don't know. They don't think about it at all. That's the problem. Yeah. Okay. They just, you know, they just, well, it's either they use the word trust in the local legislation, or they just think, well, you know, better safe than sorry. Let's declare
exactly. So it's some U.S. compliance person has looked at it and said, oh, that might be a trust under U.S. law. So let's just file the 3520s.
Yeah.
Right. Without actually knowing whether it is a trust under U.S. law.
Which mostly it isn't. But, you know, interestingly, every one of these 3520 penalties that I have been aware of, meaning I've had a conversation with somebody about it, they've all been in relation to some kind of tax favored account in their country of residence. And the idea of equating, you know, a homeland American setting up an offshore trust to hide money with a local tax favored account in another country, it is insane. I mean, these things should not even be being filed. It's so crazy.
Yeah. But to get back to what we were, the purpose, I guess, of this conversation is to think about the ways in which the U.S. government is treating Americans abroad as not being part of the American community. And I think Laura's come up with some really interesting ones in the child tax credit and the earned income tax credit, because these are ways that the U.S. uses its tax system to support those who don't have the income to support themselves. And you can have people that are in that situation who happen to be living outside the U.S. So if the U.S. is going to, you know, insist that everybody file, that every U.S. citizen file a U.S. tax return, then the U.S. ought to offer these benefits to them as well.
I certainly think that's right. You know, or at the very least, not be taxing the equivalent foreign benefits, right?
Right.
You know, which they do. So, you know, it's like the worst of all worlds, right? You know, they won't offer them. They won't, I mean, clearly they don't offer benefits. Other than the COVID-19 payments, okay, which went out universally. Some of them, I think, by accident. But generally, they don't offer benefits, but they will tax equivalent foreign benefits, right?
Something with the stimulus payments was very strange, you know, because it was based on your adjusted gross income. And so if you claimed a foreign earned income exclusion, then that wasn't going to be in your adjusted gross income. And so people who lived overseas who had an income that was higher than what you were supposed to have to be eligible for the stimulus payments got them. And there's something, you know, to me that says that when they were making these decisions about stimulus payments, they weren't thinking about overseas Americans.
Absolutely. They were not thinking about Americans abroad. Because if they had been, they would have put in, you know, a modified adjusted gross income to add back the 2555 exclusion, the foreign earned income exclusion.
Yeah.
That would have been the best case scenario. I mean,
yeah.
Otherwise they would have said if you're only eligible if you live in the United States.
Yeah. Which would have been, yeah. And they didn't even think it through.
Yeah.
So I think it's just more evidence that they don't think of overseas Americans as part of the American community.
Well, I think they clearly do not. I mean, the only people who I don't think anybody actually believes that Americans are a broader part of the American community. What I do think is that sometimes people will kind of make that up, right? You know, without really thinking about it, whether they believe it or not. and offering that as some, you know, justification for citizenship tax. We're all citizens. We're all citizens, and therefore we all should pay tax. But Americans abroad, because they live abroad, should actually be taxed more punitively. I mean, do you realize the United States is the only country in the world where when you move away, not only are you still subject to a U.S. tax system, but it's actually a more punitive tax system?
Yeah.
We're aware.
It's also depressing, isn't it, Laura?
Pretty depressing, yes.
So what's the solution?
Well, John, we know the solution. We need a pure RBT system. We just stop taxing.
So why, if we need a pure RBT system, is nobody asking for it? I mean, I think you're right. I think you're right. But how come nobody was willing to ask for it? Is it that Americans just, you know, don't feel loved unless they're taxed? I mean, what is it? No, I'm serious. Why will nobody ask for pure residence-based taxation? Why isn't that the demand? Rather than, well, let's expand the foreign earned income solution a little bit.
I don't know, John.
What do you think?
I mean, people will tell you that they're being politically expedient, but you don't give up the fight without even, you know, making known what it is that you want. You get it. It is. It's frustrating.
I think that there's an element of actually believing that, you know, we should be taxed, you know, on our non-US source income. I think there is an element of that, you know, we should be taxed. Maybe we just need it to be taxed differently. It needs to be less onerous, less penalizing, but I'm not sure that there is a general acceptance that that taxation should not exist.
Well, every other country in the world does a residence-based taxation. Why can't the U.S. do what, you know, clearly works elsewhere in the world? I think part of the problem is that, comes down to that article you wrote a while back, Laura, on the criminalization of the American immigrant. They think of when they think of Americans overseas, they think of someone who's rich and lying on a beach in the Bahamas someplace, living in a tax haven country. They don't think of a normal, you know, middle class, everybody, everyday type person who is just happens to be living in another country. So because they don't think of it that way, they think that if you go to residence-based taxation, that's giving a tax break to the wealthy. And nobody wants to be seen as giving a tax break to the wealthy. But, you know, they think people will game the system by becoming a resident of some tax haven country so they don't have to pay any tax at all. They don't realize that the vast majority of Americans overseas live in countries that charge higher tax rates than the U.S. And that it's not, there are very few who are going to tax havens. Other countries have dealt with it. They'll say, if you go to one of these specified tax haven countries, you're going to be subject to our tax for another 7 years, 10 years, or whatever. The ways to deal with it that let the majority who are living in high tax countries elsewhere go on with their lives.
Well, but, you know, but you're only going to get change in the law if people demand change and it's clear what they're demanding. I'd like to go back to Laura's point here or suggestion that maybe, just maybe, Americans abroad really do believe they should be taxed.
In that case, they should be asking for all these benefits. Because I guarantee you, if you start asking for and getting sympathy that, oh, we don't get an earned income tax credit, oh, we don't get the advanced child tax credit, but we deserve it just as much because we're just as poor, you know, we've got people who are just as poor. If we start pushing for that, maybe Congress will say, wait a minute, this is really too complex. Maybe we should just let them go.
Well, if people think logically, yes. But I see on social media a lot of people who, on the one hand, might, well, they basically will say, if you say to them, we should be getting vaccinated just like all the other Americans, we should have access to the vaccines just like all the other Americans do. If you say to them, we should have access to the child tax credit just like all the other Americans do, they will say, well, you know, since you don't live in the United States, these are Americans who themselves live overseas. They will say, well, you know, that's not reasonable. You should not ask for those things because you don't live in the United States. And they see these issues in silos because they don't make the connection between, you know, I mean, they would be right. If we lived in if the United States had a normal tax system like every other country in the world, of course we should not be expecting that, you know, the country's going to come and vaccinate us or that they're going to, you know, give us welfare payments. Of course. But you can't see these issues in a silo. You cannot separate those issues from the larger tax issue. And if you do see them separately, if you do put them in silos, you will lose. You will lose in both instances, you will lose. You will be on the hook for the penalizing taxes, and you will have nothing to show for it. Absolutely nothing. But there's a lot of people who think that way.
Well, Laura, I mean, let's look at, you know, we've been at this a long time, and let's look at this. I mean, Americans abroad may not be part of the American community, but I think with the advent of social media, there probably is a community of certain kinds of Americans abroad anyway, okay? And, you know, I'm beginning to wonder, I mean, how many of them, you know, do a high percentage of them actually put these things in silos? Yes, by God, I should be paying tax in the United States, and that's irrelevant of whether I get a COVID vaccine. You think that's
cool? Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Well, look, all of the Facebook groups are about, gee, I missed this thing that I can't get here because it's only sold in the U.S. Where do I buy a pumpkin pie, etc.
But there's when people were posting on social media complaints about not having access to the vaccine, there would be a lot of responses of people saying, you don't live in the U.S., you have no right to expect the U.S. to provide a vaccination to you. And completely unable to connect the issues, or unwilling absolutely. To connect the issues.
Absolutely.
And I'm sure that they'd say the same thing if you said, you know, we should be eligible for U.S. welfare payments. They would say, well, why? You don't live there.
Well, I actually...
Why should they tax us?
Well, yeah, I mean, I'd never thought about the welfare thing before, but, you know, if Americans abroad pay taxes, yeah, they should be entitled to welfare, I think.
If you, especially, I think it's true, even if it was administered by a different agency other than the IRS, I think it would still be true. But the fact that it's even administered by the IRS through these tax credits really just rubs your face in it. You know, when you've got in the tax code, you've got everybody, all individuals subject to U.S. taxation. But when we're going to use that same mechanism to give something back to people, oh, suddenly there you have to live in the U.S.
Well, it sounds like you think it's a pretty unfair system. Is that a fair statement?
Yes.
Yes.
Both of you, yeah. Well, so doesn't change require, though, Americans as individuals to get behind this change? I mean, once again, we see, you know, this thing being trumpeted as a major step forward, you know, this thing we talked about the other day, you know, expanding the scope of the foreign earned income exclusion, you know, blah, 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 which, you know, from my perspective, does nothing but reinforce citizenship taxation. I mean, why won't individuals get behind a movement for change? Why won't they?
No idea.
Do you agree that that's a big part of the problem here?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. People just, yeah. It's a big part of the problem. I don't have an answer to it, though.
Well, you know, as long as as people aren't sufficiently, I mean, I think they have a wish for change, but they don't have a commitment to behave in ways that would, you know, get change on the table. And I think that, you know, as you've discussed, Laura, and I agree with you completely, that the effect of the divide and conquer principle is to get people, you know, saying, well, what can I do to get off the Titanic, right? I mean, I see this thing as the Titanic going down, you know, with different classes of people, not so much on a class base the way it was on the Titanic, but we have, you know, accidentals versus expats versus immigrants, et cetera, you know, with all with different interests, short-term interests, all with different ideas of what would solve their problem, which somehow they, you know, they just are incapable of coming together to fight and commit to the only thing that solves everybody's problem, right? That is pure residency-based taxation.
Well, I think that's an interesting analogy. I see this in it with a different analogy, partly because on the Titanic, there were only a certain number of people that actually could be saved. It wasn't possible for everyone to be saved. So I guess it's normal that some people were and weren't, but I see it more as, say, a prisoner of war type of situation where, you know, isn't it John McCain who's held up as an example that he was held as prisoner of war and he was offered to be freed, but not his men that he was in prison with, and he refused to go unless, you know, they all were to go.
That may be true.
And to me, that was the moral thing to do. Mm-hmm. Anything else wasn't moral. You can't leave that type of situation knowing that you're leaving others behind. If in fact, you know, if you played your cards differently, you could all leave. You could get them all out. But I think it would have been immoral for him to take, you know, the advantage to leave like that. He did the right thing by staying. And I really see, you know, this idea that, you know, we can make things a little easier for some people, but leave other people behind is wrong. It's immoral. You should not do that. Everybody comes or nobody does.
So why do they do that?
You can placate some people, or also you can make it seem as if something's happening.
And divide and conquer.
Yeah, it's divide and conquer. You know, it quells opposition. So sooner or later, the only people you have left, you know, are going to be severely weakened. And this is the problem with this whole thing. And this is why, I mean, you know, one would imagine if you're describing this to somebody, you know, somebody didn't know a lot about the history of it, they'd say, well, you know, get everybody together. But you can't get everybody together because they don't want to come together because they all think that they have, you know, their own sort of out on this. And, you know, I don't know whether, I mean, I really don't know whether some of them have their own out or not. But what I do know is that anything that does not focus on the only thing that matters is very destructive.
Yeah.
Well, Laura, do you feel better?
Oh, yes, John. Thank you so much.
Tomorrow's an important day, you know.
Well, where Karen is, it's already tomorrow.
Today, tomorrow's an important day. That's right. All right. Well, this has been an interesting chat. Where I am, it's a Saturday evening. What better way to spend a Saturday evening than talking about citizenship taxation with Laura? Sunday morning where Karen is, I guess. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Any closing comments here, Laura?
Nope. Thank you. That's all. Thanks to you both.
All right. Any closing comments, Karen?
It's just, we need to get residence-based taxation. That's the only thing that's fair to everyone.
There you go. That's my closing comment too.
Okay. Well, so what we want is no left-outs, no carve-outs, pure residency-based taxation for all. Would you agree?
Yes.
Yep.
On that note, good morning to you, Karen. And good evening to you, Laura.
Thanks, Chad. Bye.